Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Eric Haskins, 8 years of career experience, currently a backstep firefighter for Nampa Fire Protection District in Idaho, who occasionally rides as acting officer. Eric had dreams of pursuing a career in sports, but sometimes things don't always shape out as we would like, but everything happens for a reason, and the fire service has gained what I would call a good one for sure with Eric. A man who believes in the mission and that we must train ourselves of being good at the basics before wanting to be better in specialty fields. With that, I present Mr. Eric Haskins.
My name is Eric Haskins. I'm a firefighter for Nampa Fire Department. And I got started in the fire service. At least I came on in 2016, but kind of leading up to it. As my wife says, I lived a handful of lives, and I grew up in Spokane, Washington, playing ice hockey as a kid, and kind of did that my entire life, and then tried this thing out called snowboarding. It was kind of it was the punk rock thing to do back then, and decided to take a run at that, man, and that led me down a really fun and exciting time in my life. I was a professional snowboarder. I was named to the U.S. Project Gold Team. My goal was to compete at the 2010 Winter Olympics. And then I lost my World Cup spot in 2009 and decided to retire. From there, I decided to go to school. I went to Boise State University, got a degree in exercise science. I thought I wanted to be a physical therapist because I had quite a bit of experience as a patient getting physical therapy, I got a little banged up snowboarding, and it was something I was interested in, passionate about. The closer I got to it, the more I didn't want to do it. And it was like my senior year, and I was applying to some physical therapy schools, and last minute I just said I don't want to do this, and instead moved up to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. With my girlfriend and opened up a gym. I was passionate about strength and conditioning. I was going to school, got my CSCS, and loved being a strength and conditioning coach and wanted to open up a gym instead. So I had a really cool opportunity to go up there. We loved the area, and we ended up, my girlfriend at the time was totally miserable. She wasn't having the time that that I had promised her, and I was kind of left unfulfilled as well, which was surprising. I thought, you know, I own this gym, everything was going good. I just wasn't fulfilled, and unbeknownst to my girlfriend at the time, I was really interested in going into the military, specifically like special forces. So I was going into the Army recruiter's office and talked to them, and it got to the point they were like, all right, man, well, like, you got to take this test, and you know, we'll talk about what options are available to you. So went and then took the test, came back, and like the guy was like, you know, well, let's take a look at your scores. And he's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to go SF. He's like, all right, man, like, you're good. We've got an 18 X-ray contract. It's a new program. It's basically the pipeline or the fast track to get you there. You've got to tie up basically all your loose ends here. And, you know, do you have a girlfriend? I was like, yep. He's like, does she know about it? I was like, nope. He's like, you're going to want to talk to her about it. He's like, what about, what do you do for work? Do you own a business? I was like, yep. He's like, you're going to want to sell that. I was like, okay, roger that. And he's like, and we got to ship pretty fast because you're coming up on your 30th birthday. And to be eligible for this program without going through waivers, which we want to avoid, we need to ship fast. So, like, you need to do all this right now. So I'm like, okay. And went home, talked to my girlfriend. I was like, hey, I was thinking about and wanting to do this and going to special forces and, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, "That's great. I think you'd be wonderful at it. I just won't be here when you get back." But I was pretty crushed about that. I was like, "All right. Well, what would you stick around for?" And she's like, "You've always talked about the fire service. You've got friends in the fire service. This has always been something, you've talked and been interested in. Would you consider maybe doing that?" And I just asked her, I was like, "Well, would you stick around for that?" She goes, "Yep." And so I called my buddy Frank Beauvais, which I was like, "Man, Danny Beauvais." I was like, "All
Dude,
right,
tell me
man,
that's another
right on."
topic, right?
And so my buddy Frank, living in Nampa, and called him. I was like, "Hey, gonna sell the gym, move back. Is there, could you help me get on with the fire service?" And he's like, "Totally." And I think in a week he had people come up, help me move. We sold the gym, and then my girlfriend and I moved in with him and his family. Stayed in the spare bedroom between his two kids, and it was just like everything was dedicated towards, getting my EMT, like everything. And so was testing for everybody. Ended up getting a job offer in Caldwell, and kind of making this long story hopefully shorter. Ended up lateraling to Nampa, and I now ride the back seat with my buddy Frank as captain, and we're on Engine 6, Roosevelt's Rough Riders in Nampa, and it's like we just catch ourselves smiling, like, we said this was our like goal, but like, did this really happen? It's like, yeah, man, here we are. So that's kind of the path to the fire service, man. So here we are.
Okay. Love hearing it, man. I love hearing everybody's different perspectives. So fantastic. For those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about Nampa, the size, how many stations, personnel, things of that nature?
Yeah, sure. So it's kind of easier to just say, like, whenever someone asks, like, "Where are you from?" just say Boise. And so we're just outside Boise, in the Treasure Valley. The growth here, pretty much all the cities are just growing into to each other. But we're just outside Boise, about 20 minutes. Nampa is about 100,000 people, and we just built our sixth station. Most of our houses are all single engine, single company houses. Our big house downtown, Station One, we house a truck, engine, a squad, and a battalion. And then we've got a ladder out on the east side of the city, and then running single company houses for the rest.
Okay. What's the minimum staffing on all apparatus?
Three people. So, and then
Three.
we've got the 2-person squad, which is basically, I think it's like an F-350. We're running a medic and a firefighter on that. But yeah, minimum staffing. We did just get a grant a few years ago to try to get to bump as many of our apparatuses up to a 4-person staffing. And so, we've hired more people in the last couple years than like ever before. So we've really got a lot of new faces, a lot of young blood at our department, which is exciting. It's kind of brought a lot of life into the stations, and but yeah, so I on any given day, I think maybe a couple of our engines are riding 4, and everyone else riding 3, and then we got 4 on the truck.
Okay. All right. And are you guys ALS or BLS?
Yeah, we run ALS engines, and then our truck is BLS unless we have like a medic that we can put on there.
Okay. And I'm assuming you guys don't do transport.
No, sir.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Okay. So when you finally got into the fire service, you were 30? Or close to 30?
Yeah, I want to say I was 30. Yeah. So, 'cause I went to college late, right? So I think I went to Boise State my early 20s, and then I played ice hockey for Boise State for 4 years. And so, like, by the time I got out, graduated that, yeah, I think I got hired
Okay.
at 30.
Okay. So when you first started into the fire service, was it everything you thought it would be, or was it like, oh, this industry also has people who don't really apply themselves, or people who are just here for whatever, shirt wearers,
Sure.
whatever it may be. Like, how was that for you, your first year?
Yeah, I had some good mentors, and especially living with my buddy Frank, and had been around firefighters and worked with, a lot of my friends that were. I think maybe I was aware to a sense, right? And it's, my buddies that there were big influences on me were great firefighters, good family men. Like they were such a draw to the fire service, because it's like, man, I am inspired by these men. I want to do what they do. And then you get in, you realize, like, oh, those guys are like the best in the business. They're not all like that. So yeah, was it a shock? Sure. Was I warned that maybe not everybody would maybe live up to like maybe the standard or what I thought? For sure. But as far as everything that I was looking for, especially starting in Caldwell, man, like I was told, so it was a smaller department, two stations. We had about, I forget the population, but small, but we had 140 square miles with two stations. And I just,
Damn.
people told me, they were like, dude, Caldwell's a great department. They get a ton of fire. Don't discount it, that you didn't get to, I tested for Boise and, these other departments. Like, no, like Caldwell's going to be a great place. In fact, you're probably going to fight more fire than any of us. And they weren't lying, man. I started with Caldwell, and 6 hours into my first shift, I had a first due second alarm fire, and it was like, man, the next couple of years at Caldwell was just, man, one after another. And it was such an amazing way to start my career, to the point that we were on such a run that was even abnormal for them. I remember my captain at one point pulled me into his office. He's like, I need to talk to you. It's like, oh shit, man, like I'm in trouble for something. And he just pulled me aside, and he's like, what we're experiencing right now, like I've never experienced in my life. And I'm worried that, like, when this comes to an end, like you're gonna be super disappointed. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, we're getting more fires, like, since you showed up. Not that it was like me, but it's like in this span than like really any of us have seen. And he's like, I'm just worried, like, this is all you know, and it's gonna come to an end. I'm like, well, like, okay. And he's like, but until then, we're gonna have like an awesome time. So like, just keep it up, and we're just gonna keep getting it while the getting's good. And so really, my introduction, like, I couldn't have asked for a better way to just start things off. That you go to the fire academy and you train to like fight fire, right? And it's like, that's all you want to do. And I was part of a joint academy. And so after leaving that joint academy, there was like eight different departments that had guys in there. We all kept in contact, and this list, guys would be like, oh, I got my first extrication, or I got my first car fire. And guys would, be talking about this or that. And it was like, man, I got my first, it was like every round. And it was just unbelievable, the amount of experience that I was fortunate to get early on in my career, that some of the neighboring departments and a lot of my buddies just weren't as fortunate. So
Right. I mean, it's the luck of the draw. Some guys get on, some guys or gals get on departments that see action, and some of them get on there. It's sparingly. So it to me,
yeah,
it's all on what you make it, for
sure.
sure.
Yeah.
But what would be your advice to any new person trying to figure out who they should like surround themselves around, or who they should emulate? Because we have a lot of individuals who are coming into the fire service with zero fire service experience. So they're
Yeah.
coming in, they're brand new, they're green, and they're just looking at like, what should I do? So what kind of advice would you give?
Yeah, I think obviously like coming into to your department is to keep your eyes open and look around and really get to know the people that you're working with and see who you gravitate towards. And that could be a tough time in your first year, right? Like you're on probation, like trying to figure out how to navigate that and walking on eggshells. But I think it's pretty natural to see, oh man, to get pulled in directions and I like the way that he does things, or even just the way that person treats me, right? And so, if you get pulled in those directions, I just say I wouldn't hesitate to find those people that are inspiring to you, that that you recognize, like, wow, like, he's really good at that, and to mimic and emulate them. But also, I would really encourage people to get out of their department as quickly as possible. And what I mean by that is to see, like, go to conferences, get involved with your local Fools chapter, start reading books and articles that will expose you to these people that are all over the country, right? And now with the rise of social media and all this information, it's so easy to, get to know who these people are. And, I was fortunate that I was put with a crew when I first started with some really like young, fired up guys. And so I was totally spoiled, man. Like they like instantly, like when I got there, they started, talking about Andy Fredericks and like, hey, like you should read this. And have you signed up for the Fools chapter? We're holding a training in a month. Like you should be there. And so I'm like, nope, but I'll be there. And introduced me all these people, and I was spoiled in the fact that I just thought like, well, that's just what we do, right? But I was surrounded by these people, and then they just quickly, just like with a fire hose, just we're just feeding me all this information. And then as I went to conferences and got to know people, then you really start to recognize, like, these professional firefighters that are, as they teach and instruct and how they treat you, you start to realize and be able to identify, like, these guys, like that's the type of firefighter I want to be. And then you go back to your department, and it's a filter that you're like, oh, like now I see, a little clearer, right? And so I guess my recommendation is to get outside your silo and really get involved with the fire service community as a whole, whether that's a local training, like an online community, reading books. And if you can get to some of these, conferences, it'll really open up your eyes. And I think it'll expedite your career development, versus somebody that just only attends their department's training, only knows their people. And it's like, man, you have no idea the amount of good stuff that's going on around there and would be valuable to your department if you got out and came back, which is also a tough thing, and go, hey, I saw this thing, right? And so like that's another line you got to walk. But it's like, man, that's how we get better. Like I, how many times in my department that I work for now, where guys are coming back from conferences and they're saying, we're doing a training, and after the curriculum's done, they're like, man, I saw this one thing. Can we try it? And then we see it, and it's like, well, that's what we should do because that works better. And then we implement that in our department. And so, by going out there, you can become an asset for your people so quickly if you just get outside your silo. So I guess that would be my recommendation.
Okay. And I have to 100% agree. Cannot debate you on that one. Ever since I started my journey of going out, I tell people all the time, from new people to the most senior, get out of here, go talk to these people, network, take these classes, because it's eye-opening. So 100% agree.
Yeah, and I think, people are really good about sharing information. Like every time there's like a slide that has like contact information on it, it's like I take a picture and I write that down, and I'm like, dude, I'm gonna reach out to you. And I go to these conferences, with guys that are, apparently like big names, right? Like fire service celebrities and all that. And if they put their contact information up there, like, yeah, they're going to hear from me. And it may just be bumping them on a question or like, hey, like, I took some notes. Could you tell me a little bit more? And rarely do I run into any of those people that don't set aside like everything they're doing to take 5 minutes with me. When like, I think many people will be fear like, like, who am I from, Nampa, Idaho, when they work, FDNY or, wherever these special places are. And, he's not going to want to talk to me. And it's like, you'd be surprised, man. Like, reach out, ask. And the amount of people that have like called me back and say, oh, like, hey, why don't you just come out and ride with me? And we can just like, I'll work on this with you if you want to come spend a day with me. It's like, are you serious? And I run into that more often than not, when you go to these conferences. And so it's like, if that's another recommendation, is just like, don't be afraid to reach out to these people if they say, like, contact me if there's something I can do for you. Because most of the time they mean it and they'll do it for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're right. I've never met one to say, contact them. They don't, whether it's phone, text, or email, they usually get back to you. So 100% agreed. In your opinion only, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Oh man, I love this because I recently brought this conversation up in a training, and everyone says like, man, we're aggressive. We're aggressive. And I've thought about that. I'm like, well, define aggressive. Like, it's like, well, and then like one guy asked, he used the term aggressive to define aggressive. And I was like, all right, we're just gonna move on. And so I was recently reading a book by Rothmeier. I think it's come out in like the last year or so. Was it Mastering the Craft?
Yes, I believe it
Yeah.
is.
And the verbiage that he used in there, like, I just like loved it. And because aggressive up until that point was this kind of term where you like knew it if you saw it, right? Like, but it was hard to put into words. So, and real clear for him was just having a bias for action. And so, I thought about that and I'm like, that's it. Like, to be aggressive, you have a bias for action, meaning that you have a bias to take the initiative of whatever, say if it's the fire ground, to take the initiative and to take steps to overcome or overwhelm, versus not being aggressive would be like waiting and like reacting to, say, whatever that scene or environment was giving you. Being aggressive is taking action to begin to control or confine. And so whatever strategy or tactics you're doing to overwhelm that, kind of having this like forward center of mass would be what I would call aggressive.
Okay. All right. Love it. Love it. For down the line, this question kind of goes towards like the future. Where do you see yourself at in the fire service, or at least your department?
Nampa, we've grown just a ton. When I first started with them, we were probably the oldest department in the Treasure Valley, simply because they just hadn't been able to hire anybody. So they had a lot of really experienced guys, but they would talk about going 7 years without a promotional exam, because just like no one was leaving. No one was hiring. They weren't building stations. And so you had a lot of guys that were just like, man, stuck. And it's like, man, like, couldn't promote. And then now, if you look at where Nampa is, it's like, we just had 20 people test for captain. We're constantly doing promotions at every position. And so it's a really exciting time, especially in the valley, because this is like happening across the board. There's some major departments around us that they're like, dude, if you just pass the officer's test, like you're gonna become a captain. Like, all you have to do, because there's not enough applicants, right, or candidates to fill all the spots they need. And so as far as my department goes, like, I hope we can continue to grow, right now, I think like our biggest challenge is our people. And maybe that's like universal for all departments, right? But
Right.
as we look at, 5 years ago, the average age and experience of our department versus what it is now, has significantly changed. Like the odds of you having a engine company with the average experience on it, maybe the captain is the only one with, 10 years experience and everyone else has like three or less. Like that completely changes, or it should change really, like kind of that how you're thinking strategically and the tactics that you're going to use. And so for my department, our biggest mission or challenge is like we need to train our new people and we need to get as much information out of our most senior members before they leave. And so as I see our senior members like retiring, and it's like, man, like my battalion chief is getting ready to retire, and it's like that guy has 20 years of knowledge of our city, and we should be trying to peel as much of that out of him as we can, because when he's gone, it's like, man, it a lot of us can be starting over, like the walkthroughs and the familiarization, like all the little things. So I'd love to see our department grow through education, training, and experience. I hope that at least for myself, I can be an advocate and help with that, and make sure that as we move forward, like we don't lose kind of the things where we came from.
Okay. And I would venture to say there are a good number of departments out there that are facing that, those growing pains of the senior members retiring. And due to whatever the case may be, you might have a 3 to 4 year old experienced candidate move up to captain making these
Yeah.
decisions. And I mean, it is what it is. I would say, from what I know, talking to other people, big city departments, you have some guys who don't want to really get promoted because they just like being in on the truck. So,
Sure.
but that could be another topic of its own. But you mentioned a few minutes ago, work ethic, education, and on the job experience. Kind of, you mentioned those key words, so it kind of leads to a question line. In your opinion, which holds more weight?
And what is it? Work ethic, education, and
It's either years of service, education, work ethic, or on the job experience. Like, what matters to you?
man, and I only get to pick one.
No, you can kind of list them however you want, like
Sure.
from most important to least.
Yeah. So, for me, I'm just like I would just start with like work ethic, because that just lays the foundation for everything else, in my opinion. And I think back to, so like I come from athletic background, so a lot of my thought process is through the lens of sport and those things. But I played hockey in college, and we had a ton of talent, and it was wasted on the guys that didn't work hard. And it's like, man, like he could be really great, and would make our team better, but his work ethic was nothing. So all that talent was useless. And so if you think about, its relation to the fire service, it's like, man, like we could have the smartest firefighter in the room, but if he's not willing to like share that information, to get out there and to put in the work and like the sweat to train the new guys in a way that isn't demeaning, and like, and is willing to put in that work, like that is a huge asset versus, man, that guy, he's like the best firefighter, that's great, but if he just goes to his room, it's like that's useless to me. It's useless. And so you can take somebody with no talent, and if they've got work ethic, like we can do something with that. And so yeah, I think for me at the top is work ethic, because I think we know plenty of firefighters that have been on the job for a long time, 20 years plus experience, and you know, what do they call it? It's like 20 years of the first year, right?
Right,
Something like
right.
that. And there's plenty of guys like that. And it's like, man, he's the most senior guy here. And he's done nothing throughout his career to advance his knowledge, his skill set. And it's like, you know, the fire service has moved on without him. And you know, as far as like experience goes, like we can't manufacture fires.
Exactly.
At least, you know, we shouldn't, right? Like I'm pretty sure there's a law against that.
Right.
And so that's a tough thing is, you know, we want experience, but we, you know, how do we get that if you're at a slow department, right? Or you're just like in a lull, it's like, man, we're just not catching anything. And it's just going to come down to training. We have to manufacture those experiences to give them like the best tools so that hopefully when their day comes, we've at least like equipped them with the tools and abilities to recognize the things that, you know, need to be taken care of to keep them safe, to remain aggressive and do that so that like when they do get their chance, you know, they knock it out of the park, right? So I, you know, I think it's I want to say like Winston Churchill probably had a quote of something along the lines of, you know, how poor the man who waited his whole life for his opportunity and when it came, he was willfully unprepared, right? And so it's our job, like we have to train those people so that when their time comes, it's like they're ready, and we have to manufacture those experiences for them. So.
Nice. Okay. Love it. Love it. And I so 100% agree with you on the experience part. Like you said earlier, there are just some departments out there that they don't get as much fire duty that true firefighters want. But if you're on a department as such, there are different avenues such as conferences, trainings that put on live burn type of classes where reading the smoke, searching. If you go to those classes, you get those reps, you kind of form, I don't want to say you kind of form like a behavior, but when that time comes where you're on shift and you do get that structured fire, what you're seeing is not new to you because it's like, oh yeah, just a couple months ago I went to this class and I remember this guy, this is what the instructors were showing me. So definitely attending some sort of conference or training. Or, I mean, there's mutual aid departments out there that do live burns. Like, there's always an avenue where
Yeah.
just because you don't see fire duty doesn't mean you can't get those reps in.
Yeah, and I think that just stresses the importance of like realistic training, you know. And so in those, you know, instances and personally, I think, you know, none of us are getting the amount of fire that we want, right? Like it, I don't know if anyone's waving their hand going, oh man, I sure could go for less structure fires, right? So and like if there is someone out there, like let me talk to him, man, because and let me know if you're hiring. But you know, the importance of realistic training so that when they do experience that first fire, or you know, maybe it's been a while since they've done it, the training has created an environment where they can recognize like the things that are important and they can apply the skills versus if our training, like especially like burns in a Connex box, if they're taught to go in there and pencil the ceiling, right? And like don't put you know, don't put it out, you know, so that you know we don't have to reset like all those things. And if that's the only training that they get, well, what do you think is going to happen when you like go in there? They're going to do that exact thing. Or if we don't get those training burns hot enough, we're going to get a structure fire where you're going to go in and be like, all right, man, like we got to search, you know, we're headed to the CD corner bedroom, let's go. And they go, it's too hot, we can't go. And it's like, it's too hot, like it's a campfire in here, man. But they've never felt the heat before. And so that's our fault for, yeah, I get it. It's like we want to keep it safe, but we also have to like, you know, they've got to feel the heat. They've got to know what that room is going to look like. You know, like what does low vis like look and feel like, right? So is it a smoke machine, right? That it's like, oh, like, you know, working with a guy caught his first fire and he's like, man, I couldn't see shit. And it's like, yeah, it's a little different than like the smoke machine, right?
Right.
And there's value in those things. But if we have an opportunity to make things that more realistic, it's going to make them safer and give us the ability to do our job better. And so that just the importance of that. And if you aren't getting the job duty, you gotta design your training to be as realistic as you can. And that's a tough thing to navigate. But even, I think, in my academy, there was such a focus on like skill sheets, right? And there are these like check boxes, right? And over the years, we've really revamped and evaluated our skill sheets, going away from, say, the IFSTA and these textbooks, and going, we need to build these skill sheets like it's in the streets. And that's the standard that we're going to hold them to. Because, like, I remember, my first fire, right? I just gotten out of the academy. I'm all ready to do this and all that. And when we're pulling up and we're driving or going there, they're using terms that I'd never heard before. It's like, oh man, look at the column on that. Oh man, like, okay, we're gonna go second alarm. Let's call this working fire. And I'm like, no fucking clue what those guys are saying, but it sounds awesome. And Cap turns around and he looks at me. He's like, Askins, you ready for this shit? And I'm like, yeah. And I turn back around and I'm like, I have no idea what I'm about to do. And he's like, all right, man, we're gonna lay in. And I just remember them pulling the brake. And for this moment, I was like, I don't know what to do. And in that moment, I was like, all right, he said, lay it forward, lay. And I just like jogged my memory. I was like, all right, man, forward lay. What are my steps? I'm gonna get out. I'm gonna go hydrant bag. I'm gonna wrap a hydrant. I'm gonna tell him. And so I started going through these steps and it got me moving forward. And then eventually I was like, oh no, I've seen this before. This time there's a house at the end of this on fire, but this is just like the way I trained. And fortunately, like the skill sheets and the way that I was taught was the way that I needed to perform it on the fire ground. So the importance of that, under high stress for those standards and practices to be exactly what you expect them to do on the streets.
Love it. I love it. So many people can relate to that. I'm trying to think back. It's been a while from my first structure fire. I was nervous. My leg had like this twitch. My heart was racing, and it was just like, all right, calm down, and then just perform your skill set, perform what you got to do. So I love it, man. I love it.
Yeah.
I did have a question. I'm going to lose it. I don't know why. I'll get back to that question. Whenever I get that thought, I'll get back to it. Another topic, recruitment and retention. What do you think some departments are doing good on, bad on, and what do you think we can overall improve to get competent bodies in the seats, not just bodies? Because my issue is some areas are just wanting bodies, and we don't
Sure.
need, this is not a regular 8 to 5 pencil pushing job. This is a job where decisions you make, life, death, injury, your crew could get hurt, like there's real consequences.
Yeah, so I mean, recruitment, I think across like the country is a challenge, right? And you can get into the whole like generation this or generation that, and it's like, well, doesn't matter because this is what we're dealing with. Recruitment, man, I read a good book years ago. And it's guy ex-SEAL, his name's Mike Cirelli, and he talks a lot about like selection and those things. And he had this kind of quote in there, was that we'll recruit for character and train for skill. And working on hiring boards and those things and oral interviews, I've really used that as my filter of like, we are going to hire for character and train for skill. And so, when we start thinking about recruiting based on that, because if our academy and those things are set up, we can give them all the skills that they need. But if they're of someone of low character, it's like these are some inherent things that it's like we can't make you a better person. Like if you're a dirtbag, man, there's it's gonna be hard to get that out of you. And so, applying that to like our recruitment practices, I think the departments that are looking at that, hire for character, train for skill, like I think they're knocking it out of the park. And if you're the other way around, I think you may be missing. So that's kind of a filter I look through when it comes to selecting people. And then the generation and those things, it's a different group that are coming from backgrounds. Like worked with a guy that he'd never mowed a lawn before, and it was like, what? And you're running into a group that's little to no experience manual labor. They've been part of the evolution of tech. Everything is at the palm of their hand. And when I tell them, like, yeah, like, we had map books and we were in the back, like you had to get out the map books and figure out your routing. And they were just like, man, I couldn't do that. And it's actually not that big of a deal. But and so understanding the differences and the backgrounds of the people that are coming in, and we can't use that against them, because it's just like, no, this is what they're bringing in. And actually their skills with tech and those things are an advantage to us, because this is the way the world's going. And we can fight all day and say, oh, I don't want to get on board with, all this like new stuff. And it's like, well, these people that we're bringing in understand this very quickly and might be able to help out some of the dinosaurs and explain that and get us moving in the right direction. So that they're extremely valuable in that aspect. So knowing that that's the type of group we're out there, like, where are you recruiting from? Like, if not a lot of people are going into the trades and more people are coming from different backgrounds, do you have exposure in other areas that are talking to those people? Do you have an EMT requirement that is keeping good people out of your selection process? Like, that's pretty common. Is we have a lot of good people working full-time jobs that have a family, they have kids, and they would love to be in the fire service. People of excellent character, high skill, but they don't have the option to take a 16-week or however long EMT course because their family's relying on them to put food on the table. And so we're missing out on a lot of good candidates, because it's just like, man, I'd love to be with you. I can't sacrifice my family to just not work, right? And so that was something we did a few years ago, is we dropped our EMT requirement. And we said, yeah, we're going to add the EMT certification into our recruit academy. And our applicant pool skyrocketed. We had more applicants than the major departments around us who still had that standard. And now it just opened us up to the sea of really good people who would have never had the chance. We got them into the academy, taught them, like trained them for skill, got them the EMT. And now it's like, dude, we knocked this out of the park. We've got really good people because we didn't create this barrier to entry for them. And so with the landscape of kind of the general population changing, I think our recruitment and our selection processes have to change to open up avenues for good people to kind of come forward, and for us to then support them to get them into our organizations, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, 100% does for me. And one thing I love that you stated was, the quote unquote new generation coming in. You mentioned the individual that's never cut grass before. So, yes, it is kind of shocking, like for people like me and you and others who are older in age, but it's not that person's fault that they've never been exposed to that. Like they're only exposed to what they're exposed to. You know what I mean? Like, and they catch a bad rap. Now, granted, with every category, everything we talk about, there's always bad apples. There's always going to be one that takes their, well, I haven't had this to the extreme of, well, I don't have it. I don't care that you're trying to show it to me. I don't want to learn it. But don't make fun of that person who wants to learn it and just never had, because they've never been exposed to it. For me, instance, when I got into the fire service, I've never ran a chainsaw before. Like, I've seen a
Yeah.
chainsaw, but my dad
Yeah.
never owned a chainsaw. My dad
Yeah.
did things manually. To this day, it is 2024. Well, actually, yeah, it's 2024. I'll say in 2020 or 2021, I finally convinced my dad to edge with an edger or a weed eater. He would
Yeah.
literally do take scissors
Yeah.
and just go. And I'm like, Dad, there's ways that are a lot easier for you and faster if you do it this way. I showed it
Yeah,
to him.
but the battery doesn't die on these, you know?
And you're exactly right.
Yeah,
So when I bought it for him, I got him two because I knew how he would be. And that's the thing, like, people only know what they only know. So I hate whenever, like, you hear that, oh, well, well, they're useless. No, they're not, because for the old timers with technology and cell phones and computers, these are the people who, if you can't get something, they can go, oh, let me see it. Bam, 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 done. And you're like, oh, hell, how'd you do that? It's like, well, maybe if you weren't a dick, they would have helped you a long time ago.
Well, so like the chainsaw, it's a perfect example. Is you know the classic is you're like, all right, you know, we need to refuel the chainsaws. I think we got just straight gas, so we're gonna have to mix. And they're like, oh my God, like what, you don't just put straight gas in this? Like, no, man, like we gotta have a mixed gas, and they have no idea, right? Because they've never had to do it before, right? And so you could be a dick, make fun of them, and then that's going to hurt them in the long range, like, you know, exponentially. Or you could just show them and they do it once, you hang with them, and then now you've equipped them, and the next person who doesn't feel comfortable going to their officer, right, for whatever reason, is like, man, I don't know how to do this, who do I ask? It's like, well, you just gave that person the tools to do it. They can go to that other newer person. And now you've just force multiplied people that are now helping each other. And, you know, the chainsaw, like never ran a chainsaw. And so now we go back into the training aspect of, you know, maybe in the academy, the original curriculum that's been around forever. It's like, yeah, we do three days of saws, you know? Well, that might have to change to, we have to do 2 weeks of chainsaws now, because we just have to do 1 week of familiarization with it. And so if that's the new wave of people coming in, is to take a hard magnifying glass to your curriculum and go, does this serve the people coming in, right? Like, do we build the players around our offense, or do we build the offense around our players? And if these are the players coming in and they can't catch the ball, well, looks like we're running, you know? And so, you know, having the ability to do that and to change, and then where it pays off is like, all right, administration or whatever is like, yeah, we're implementing this new software, or we're doing team meetings, and we're going to be doing this stuff, you know, remotely. And now everyone is like, I don't even know how to hook up the camera or like to do this. And then, you know, one guy raises his hand and goes, oh yeah, that's easy, let me take care of that. And comes in, and it's like, it's a valuable asset, right? And everything gets more and more technologically advanced. These are the people, they're going to help bring the dinosaurs, like they're going to help us evolve. And so we need those people.
Absolutely, 100%, 100%. So you are I'm pretty sure firehouse strength and conditioning type coach, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so with you being in the fire service, and you said you came from a sports background. I don't personally know you, but looking at you seem very fit. So,
Man, it's the filter or whatever, right? So,
at what point did you decide in your career that you're going to attempt smoke diver program? Because I'm sure by now everybody knows what a smoke diver program is. There are
sure.
various ones out there, but what sparked that interest of, okay, I'm going to train, I'm going to prepare this way to put my body, my mind into obtaining this goal?
Yeah. So I think I was pretty early on. It's just it was a couple years in, and I'd walked into to a room. We call it the war room. It's kind of where a group of us young guys always get together and watch YouTube videos and talk all like, about, well, all the things we were fired up about, right? And going in there, and one guy was like, at the time I was helping a neighboring department with their recruit academy PT. And he's like, "Hey, have you met this guy?" I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Dude, how is he, man? He's a Georgia smoke diver." And I was like, "What's a Georgia smoke diver?" And he was like, "Oh man, they're like the Navy SEALs of the fire service." And instantly I was like, "Man, I gotta figure it, like, there's a thing out there that's like that." I'm like, "Man, I want to know more about it." And so that was kind of what piqued my interest. That was the introduction of like, there's this thing out there. And back then, went on their website, and they may or may not keep things very general and not release a lot of information. And so I'm looking at it, and I'm like, they've got videos from like the 80s, and it's just like I think I know what this thing is. Either way, I think I want to be a part of this. And at that point, I was like, I was fired up, man. And I wanted, I was looking for something. And as I explored and researched this thing, I'm like, I think this is what I'm looking for. I want something that is going to stretch me to the boundaries of my skill set. And, we're making fires, we're doing these things, but, are you really as good as you think you are? And what are you capable of? And until you're tested, like, you have no idea. And so that was kind of at the root of it. And then I finally just, I reached out, and I bugged them forever because it was hard to get in. And I just kept bugging them. And I think they got tired of hearing from me. And they're like, "All right, dude, like, yeah, you're in the next class." And so I had looked at their website. They had some example workouts, and then just the stuff that I'd put together. I'm like, "Yeah, I'm pretty sure, if I do this training, like, it looks like that'll match up with kind of the demands of what they're showing me." And then also in the back of my mind, like, before joining the fire service, like, I wanted to be like a Navy SEAL. I wanted to be SF. And so there was this part of me that wanted whatever I was going to be that. And so I'm like, I'm going to train for the most physically demanding week of my life. I want this to be the toughest thing I've ever done. So I created this scenario in my head of like, what would be the toughest training that I could go to? I'm going to train for that. So I kind of created this in my mind, and I'm like, that's what I'm going to train for. And so yeah, I dedicated myself to it. I was already training regularly. I changed some things. And then when I got down there, it was everything I was looking for and more. And so maybe it was luck, I don't know, but I think I went in physically well prepared, and ended up being successful. So
First time.
yeah.
Wow. Awesome. Awesome.
So I was the Like, no one else had from the area had done it. No one had graduated from Idaho. So I didn't really have anyone to like reach out to or ask questions. And it was a big investment. I flew down there, and I just utilized all of those things like as an advantage for me. So when things got hard, or if you wanted to quit or you started to question yourself, it's like, man, I've got thousands of miles between me. And, I used all those things to like help fuel me and motivate me when things got hard, versus, a lot of people end up going home early because it's like at the end of the night, they could be in a warm bed surrounded by their family, and like it could all be over, right? And so, I think the distance that I was away, the amount of money that it just took for me to ship all my stuff down there. And it was like, man, I'm so invested in this that I just used all that as more fuel that like, there's no way that I'm going home. I've already put too much into this, whether it was the physical training, the expenses, everything. It's like, there's no way I'm going home. And then you run into things where it's like, yeah, it doesn't matter. Like you either perform or you don't. It's like, I get it. You don't want to quit, but if you can't perform, like there's a standard here.
Right.
And you know, couple of evolutions, there were things that really challenged me. And when I came out the other end and was successful, it was like, I can do anything. Like I was able to overcome that, use my skill set, the things that they taught me, things that they trained me, and overcome what seemed impossible. Man, you walk out of that and you're like empowered, and you're like, dude, like give me the hardest jobs because my belief in myself and my skill set has never been higher. So it was a super valuable experience for me. So
And one thing I'm taking away from it is we're correlating that to your GSD experience, but that can be correlated to anything in life. It can be
yeah.
correlated to a different avenue in the fire service. Okay. Like me, for instance, I was on an engine and I'm going on a ladder truck now. I'm going to do ladder truck functions. Man, I've never really dealt with a 28 or a 35, but don't let that hold you back. Like from talking to people, whether it's a Georgia smoke diver, Florida smoke diver, or just a regular jam up fireman, everything's up here. It's in your mind. If you
Yeah.
tell yourself I can do it and you put in the work and the preparation, the benefits come after. Like, you know, nothing's impossible until you start doubting yourself here.
Yeah, like all the good things in life like are at the end of adversity or effort. And what makes you know, like it's so good is the sacrifice and the investment that you had to put into it. If it was easy, it wouldn't mean anything to you. And so to accept that, like, this is hard, then when you master something, so whether it's the 28, right, like the struggles, you're out there and you put it in. And then when you are successful, that means something to you. You've given it value. And so, you know, years back, I was chatting with Gary Lane, and he was talking about, you know, just practicing basic like skills and those things. He's like, it's a lot like skateboarding. And, you know, I grew up skateboarding, and I kind of looked at him and was like, well, what do you mean? And he's like, remember when you first like trying to learn how to like just like ollie, like jump over a curb, and you were by yourself in the street, and you fell and you fell, and it was like the most basic thing, right? And your friends weren't around and any of that, but you spent months like working on this thing. And then, you know, you get that, and then you get the next thing, and this comes after hours and months and of falling down and training. And then it's like your buddies see you 6 months later, and you know, if it's skateboarding, they're like, dude, when did you get so good? And it's like, yeah, I've been putting in the work by myself like this whole time, and you're just seeing the product of this. But this means something to me, and you know what I'm able to do carries value because of the sweat equity that I've put into it. And so, you know, whether it's throwing a 28 or it's hose handling the basic movements, it's like expect it to be hard. It's supposed to be hard, and it feels a lot better because it's hard when you get it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. My last question for you. It involves leadership. So I'm pretty sure I know before we actually started recording, you mentioned how, yes, you're technically a backseat firefighter, but you do ride up as officer from time to time. I'm assuming at some point in your career, you would like to be a company officer. So as far as a leadership standpoint, if you're able to obtain that, what are you looking? Well, number one, what do you look for in a leader, and what do you want to do if fortunate to get in that position?
Yes, man, leadership, that is there's a lot of books out there. There's a lot of people
Yeah.
talking about leadership, and you could argue that it can be done a million different ways, or like in my mind, I think leadership is pretty simple, and it starts with leading by example. And so what I look for out of leadership is someone who's willing to get down in it with me. Show it to me, who's been there before, or is humble enough to say, you know, I've never had to do this, But I've learned this from experienced guys and in training, and like this is what I would do, right? So out of leader, like I want someone who's willing to come down on my level, and sweat alongside me. And then as far as my, if you call it leadership style or my job as an officer, when I do step into that role, is to provide my crew. Like, my crew is my number one priority. And my goal and my mission is to provide them with whatever they need to advance their career, to advance their skill set, to make sure that they go home and that they're safe, to make sure that they are, have a positive impact on my organization. And so my whole job is to make sure that they get what they need to accomplish the mission and to advance like their career and whatever they want to do, right? There's so many different paths you can take. And so it's just having a conversation. We show up in the morning and it's like, what do you guys need? What do I have that I can provide to you? What can you take from me? And like, let's focus on that. And if it's not something that I can get you, then I will go see to it. I'll ruffle the feathers and I'll shake the tree to make sure that you do. Because our priority is obviously to serve the citizens of our community, provide them with the best service possible. And we do that by providing them with the best like service. And that comes through training, skills, education. And so to start recognizing weaknesses and where they fall short, and then provide them with those answers. And we can't waste any time on that. I probably try to maybe run the crew a little too hard sometimes, because it's just like, man, I just don't want a wasted moment. What do you guys need? All right, I'm gonna see to it that you get that. And so that's a big priority to me. And then understanding, what are the limitations of my crew. And so as I was working on the truck one this last shift, and had a really green crew. And so there are working on the truck for a while, there's like all sorts of really cool and the cool sexy stuff that we could work on in training. And so I've got a training plan, and I'm like, all right, here are the things we're going to work on. And then talking and meeting, working with the crew, it's like, scratch that. We need to go back to some basics, and we need to be really good at some basic things, or else none of this other stuff matters. And so the ability to show up, figure out like, what are your weaknesses, and to address those, right? And so there's kind of like, have you heard of like a SWOT analysis? Strengths, weaknesses, right? Opportunities and threats. It's like using that as a filter as I look at the individual, as I look at the crew, as I look at the battalion. And it's like I'm performing this constant SWOT analysis to go on and utilizing people for their strengths, and then making sure that their weaknesses, we're addressing those, and not just rolling the dice going, ooh, I hope we don't get something big, because I got a green crew. It's like, well, if we do get something big, what's the most I can get out of the crew that I got? And that's what we're gonna do. And I told my BC that. I told my guys, I was like, look, here's the deal. Like, if we get like these sorts of situations, like, this is probably what we're gonna do, because we just can't do some of those advanced things, but we need to be really good at the basics, and we can get a lot done with being really good at the basics.
Perfectly said. And I love how you hit on the basics. The basics are the foundation for, like, you can't expect to perform up here, like, the specialty, the SOC, special operations type deal, without mastering pulling a hose line, basic search, forcible entry. So I definitely love the message.
Awesome, man.
I call this like a little shameless plug. You are a firehouse strength and conditioning coach. If somebody wanted to get a hold of you for whatever, there are various people out there who may struggle in certain areas and just need a little coaching, a little
Sure.
nudge, how would they go about doing it?
Yeah, so do you have an Instagram page? Like I hate social media. It's kind of a necessary evil these days. So you can find so Firehouse Strength and Conditioning is a program I started, and it is strength and conditioning designed specifically for the demands of the fire ground and firefighters. So it's an online training program. You can learn more about that at firehousestrengthandconditioning.com. We do I've got an Instagram page, Firehouse SC, where you can kind of see some of the content and the stuff that we're putting out. And then you can always email me at firehousestrengthcoach at gmail.com and field questions all day, every day from people just looking for that. Hey man, I'm in this situation. What would you recommend? And it's like, I'm happy to discuss whatever you got, man, whether it's helping, your department work on like building a culture of fitness, right? Trying to, get the young guys that are fired up, man. Like I just can't get the ball moving. It's like, well, let me give you some ideas because I made all the mistakes. Let me like keep you from making the same mistakes and pick up the ball and get rolling. And I'll show you kind of the things that worked for me and what's worked for other organizations. So, yeah, that's probably the best way to reach out to me, kind of see what we're doing. And, yeah, happy to talk to whoever.
All right, copy that. Eric, man, I appreciate you taking time out of your day to do this interview to give us insight about NAPA, to tell the listeners out there little gems, what I call gems and nuggets, because sometimes people need to hear that other than from me or from their superiors, the people they work with. It sometimes takes that outside person to make somebody go, shit, he's right. Like, I've been doing this. I have done this. I need to quit. So I just want to say thank you, man, for coming on.
No, thank you, man. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yes, sir. You have a good day.
All right, you too.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.